This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervey, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here flying solo once again as Kerry Kasem is on an assignment. We sent her to Las Vegas to figure out what the heck is going on in Sin City. And we haven't heard back from her in 2 weeks. Hopefully she will be back in her seat co-piloting this program in the next week or so. So stay tuned for that. And I haven't even heard from her, so I'm not sure how she's doing, but I hope she's doing well. Today is a topic that I'm not sure she has a lot to say about since she is not a lawyer, but I do. I am a lawyer, been a lawyer for 25 years, and I've been in big law firms, small law firms. Now I have my own law firm with about 8 attorneys, so it's a small law firm. And I have heard so many stories over the years about bullying and harassment in the legal profession, more specifically in law firms. Now, there's sexual harassment, there's abuse, there's other types of verbal harassment, and a lot of bullying. And I'm not sure why it occurs specific in the legal profession, although I'm sure it occurs in any company, any line of work. But it's really rampant in the legal profession. A lot of stress for lawyers, and I've represented a number of different lawyers, judges in the legal profession, other people, assistants, file clerks. In workers' compensation cases, there have been a number of cases of bullying, of harassment, of abuse, and other really difficult issues that have really hurt people in a lot of ways, careers and physically and emotionally. We're going to talk about that today. We are going to talk about bullying and sexual harassment in the legal profession and other forms of harassment. And we have a couple of experts on. We're going to start our discussion talking about a study that was done by the International Bar Association, where they surveyed almost 7,000 lawyers in 135 countries. And we're going to talk about the results of this study. And if you think that bullying is only in the United States, well, think again, because it is all over the world. In this study, we learned that 1 out of 2 women suffered bullying in law firms, and 1 out of 3 women experienced sexual harassment. Those are huge numbers. 1 out of 3 male respondents had been bullied. And there's different types of bullying. And we have to find out what's going on in the workplace, specifically in big law and the legal profession. If you want to call in with your stories, you can call 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-KABC. And tell us what happened to you if you're a lawyer or if you work in a law firm. First, we want to talk about this study. We're going to welcome to Gervey's Law, Karen Pender, who's the legal advisor, legal policy and research unit of the International Bar Association. And he had a lot to do with this study. He's also a visiting fellow at the Australian National University College of Law Center for International and Public Law. But we want to talk about bullying in the law. Karen Pender, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thanks a lot.
It's great to have you. Tell us a little bit how you got involved, your legal policy and research unit, International Bar Association, and how did you get involved and how did the association get involved in this area?
Sure. So if we cast our mind back a few years, my predecessor in this role was working on a project about the barriers that women face in particularly commercial law firms. There's been parity at entry level or even disproportionate numbers of women entering the profession for 20 or 30 years in major jurisdictions such as the US. I think, you know, the current rate's about 60% of law graduates are female. But that hadn't, over the passage of two or three decades, filtered to the top of the profession. And the profession remains one overwhelmingly dominated by men at the senior end. So my colleague was doing research on that, and they did a similar survey, and they identified that bullying and sexual harassment were real barriers to female advancement in the profession. They were also affecting men. And they got that data in July of 2017, and they were working on it. They were about to publish it when the Harvey Weinstein scandal hit, and the Me Too movement quickly spread into the legal profession. So with the impetus of that and with the impetus of our other study, we thought we really need to look into this in more detail. And so last year, we spent most of the year working on this report, which we published in May of this year. As you said, survey about 7,000 people around the world to get a really granular understanding of the nature, prevalence and impact of these forms of conduct. And this was the biggest survey ever undertaken by the IBA and the biggest survey of its kind on this issue.
Now, Kieran, when you saw the results from the survey, was it something that was shocking to you and your colleagues, or was it expected?
I've been asked that question a few times, and my answer is I wasn't shocked, I wasn't surprised, because we expected this. A lot of what the survey found were things that we already knew anecdotally. But to have the raw data and to have the empirical confirmation that these issues are rife in legal workplaces of all natures all around the world was quite shocking. And particularly the legal profession, you know, these are issues that have a societal origin. You know, the legal profession isn't unique in struggling with bullying and sexual harassment. But this is a profession that prides itself on the highest ethical standards, that counsels other sectors on dealing with these issues. So I think that's what made it particularly shocking, that it was so bad in this profession when we're supposed to hold ourselves to higher standards.
And when you say that it's not just isolated in the legal profession, clearly other studies have taken place. We had Matt Packness on our show who talked about a book that he wrote last year on bullying in the workplace. His basis was he had worked as an assistant coach at Penn State University under Joe Paterno. And he talked about the climate and the environment at Penn State, and talked about other places of work, places of business, where that kind of harassing environment and atmosphere existed. When you looked at the legal profession, Kieran, tell us about the main things that you saw as a result of this study. I've touched on a couple, but what really stood out in terms of what's going on in the legal profession at law firms throughout the world?
Sure. So I think firstly, it's worth mentioning, if you look at the research that's been done on bullying and harassment and how they manifest in workplaces generally and the factors that contribute to them, it's things like strict hierarchies, dependence on superiors for progression, male-dominated workplaces and male-dominated leadership. And you go through those and you tick them and you're basically describing the legal profession. So I think there are clearly structural reasons why these things are so prevalent in the profession. Our research found that they're rife, they're underreported. People very infrequently report bullying or sexual harassment when they occur. And when, in the rare cases they do report, the workplaces aren't doing enough. We found that perpetrators are very rarely sanctioned. The person, the victim, the target, very rarely felt that they'd been, the circumstances had been resolved to their satisfaction. And it's having a huge impact. The number of people who are leaving their workplace or leaving the profession as a whole are staggering as a result of these forms of conduct, which means that, you know, even if you, there's very strong moral, ethical, legal reasons why the profession must deal with these forms of conduct. But even putting those aside, there's a business case for making legal workplaces better and eradicating bullying and sexual harassment, because we have so many people leaving the profession and leaving their workplaces.
You know, it's funny because I thought that was just at my firm and in my area of law, but I guess it's rampant throughout the world and in different areas of law. Just last week, I ran into a young attorney who's only been practicing for about 6 years. And I asked him how things were going, and he said, well, I changed firms. I said, oh, I didn't know that. What happened? And he told me stories about how he is hard of hearing. He has hearing aids, and his boss would come to him and say things like, can't you hear what I'm saying? And don't those hearing aids work? What? How can we use you as an attorney if you can't hear? And he said it right out in the open. This guy felt horrible. Instead of filing any claims, Americans with Disability Act or workers' compensation claims, he just picked up and left and found another firm, which he now says is a better fit. Kieran, give us some ideas. That's one story. I'm sure you've heard so many of them. Give us some ideas of the form of bullying or harassment that you saw in the survey and that you're aware of through your research.
So the survey was mainly quantitative. We mainly asked people yes or no sort of questions. But actually the most impactful responses we got were where we gave people an option to describe their experiences. So we heard thousands of stories of a similar nature of horrific treatment people had suffered in the profession. And I must say, reading through story after story, and we've extracted a lot of them in our report, was really challenging because they are quite impactful. So we heard stories, for example, of their phones being thrown at people, physical violence. But then at the other end of the bullying spectrum, more insidious, spreading rumors, excluding people, affecting their work progression. On the sexual harassment front, similarly, there's a range, and it starts with comments, sexist comments, sexualized comments. And then we heard horrific stories of inappropriate physical conduct, sexual assault. And I think in a lot of cases, what was really challenging and highlights the problem is the power imbalance. So you have partners, senior lawyers, taking advantage of their junior associates, sexually harassing them at work social events, bullying their junior associates, in the knowledge that it's really hard, given the power imbalance, for them to speak up and say no or report. And it's a small industry. There's millions of lawyers, but it's a pretty small world. And so people are just afraid to speak up because they know that that reputation will follow them.
You know, when you talk about that, it begs the question of what can be done. Because obviously when the International Bar Association does a survey like this, it's not just for the fun of it. There's got to be a goal, an objective to try and improve the situation, help out. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back here, and I want to ask you about anything that can be done moving forward, because you bring up the point of the power, power struggle, and also the money aspects of it. There's a lot of money involved in big law. You would expect that there's going to be bullying, but how do we really try to confront it and do something in the face of the power and the money to improve the situation? And we'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
London calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down.
London calling. All right, we're back. That is really bad. So we understand Kieran Pender's in London, and I guess he's calling, so London calling. I guess they have too much time on their hands in our studio here. Kieran, we are talking about bullying and harassment in the legal profession. The study was done by the International Bar Association, and Kieran Pender is the legal advisor for Legal Policy and Research Unit for the IBA. We were talking about the study and about how maybe not surprising, but how I guess it's really impactful to see what people reported to you in the study of the real levels of and predominance, how rife in the legal profession bullying is. Tell us about what you are doing now that you have the study and how it can be confronted or how it can the situation can be improved. And I know that's not an easy question.
It's not. And that's the real challenge we have. And the report is the first step to achieving change, we hope. Modest step, but the first step. The report sets out 10 recommendations, and they're aimed at individuals, at legal workplaces, at law societies, bar associations, regulators. And for each recommendation, the International Bar Association has committed to doing certain things to advance that recommendation. So, for example, the first is to raise awareness. We need to break the silence, break the stigma, the taboo that exists around these issues. So I was really pleased to be invited on the show today to talk about these issues. And to that end, the IBA is having events all around the world. We started in London, we've been to the East Coast, we've been to Mexico, Scotland, Budapest, Brussels, and later this year we will sort of really cover the globe, having events and across about 25 cities to get the conversation going in places that hasn't already started or continue the dialogue where it has started. The report, as I said, 10 recommendations, that's the first. We talk about the need for policies and procedures, training, ownership from the top. Reporting is the biggest challenge. You know, people aren't reporting. How do we improve that? We talk about the need for flexible reporting models.
What are you saying here? Flexible reporting, because I want to pick up on that. Last week we had Gloria Allred on the show, and she was talking about the problems that she totally understands of women reporting when they are harassed. There's a lot of reasons for it, and she never forces any of her clients to come out in the media or to report them or to disclose who they are. So tell us about when you say flexible reporting. It's the same, obviously, because a lot of Gloria Allred's issues are the same issues we're talking about, but there's also bullying as well. And a lot of times you have men who may be bullied and they just don't want to report it. They don't want to risk their careers, which they perceive as risking a blemish on their careers. So what does the IBA suggest in that regard?
So we encourage legal workplaces and regulators where they're recipients of complaints to have as many touch points as possible for people to report informally, anonymously if they want, or more formally. So it may be that someone is comfortable talking to their manager about this, but they might not be. They may be comfortable talking to HR, they may not be. It's about having a number of channels of differing levels of formality, differing levels of seriousness. One of the things we heard from survey respondents was that incidents would occur that they didn't feel warranted going formally and making a proper complaint, but they did want to let someone know and make sure that at least this was communicated. And often those channels for less formal, less serious incidents don't exist. So it's about being open to the range of conduct that might occur and might be reported, and empowering rather than silencing those who want to speak up to incidents that have occurred.
You know, it's really a sensitive subject, and I can see by looking at our board that people want to talk about it. I'm sure they've experienced it, or they know people who have. It really becomes painful. David, you're in L.A. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Helen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, man.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about your situation and, how things have progressed.
Well, first of all, I think everybody should know that you and I both went to Halliburton Hockey Haven when we were kids. And,
Halliburton Hockey Haven in Ontario, Canada.
Exactly. So we have that. We have that.
I didn't know you there, though. Huh.
No, you didn't. So I listened to Kieran's talk the other day, and I appreciate what he had to say. And so I've been a lawyer for 25 years, and starting with law school all the way till presently, I have experienced personally and witnessed abuse all the time. It's rampant in our industry, including behavior of judges. And I don't know why we haven't talked about this in greater depth going back decades. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the profession has lost it's touch. It's no longer the profession I once was. When I got into law school, I was motivated. I came out of the military and finished my degree and was excited about a legal career. And it was a thought process that I put a lot of time and effort into. And for me, it was a career. I felt it was a passion for me. And the industry has burned me out. It's just simply burned me out. And it's, I'm older now and trying to reacquaint myself as to whether I want to jump back in or do something different is not fun.
So,
not a fun thing to experience.
David, yep. There's a lot of people who aren't lawyers who haven't experienced being in a law firm. Tell us a little bit about examples that have led to this burnout, have led to you having this really jaded a view of the legal profession. And I'm sure it's something that Kieran has heard too many times.
Yeah, well, I'm going to just start by saying that in all the environments that I've worked in, it was always the culture from ownership or the power players that determined whether it was an environment that was nurturing and supportive and successful and cooperative versus controlling, fear-based, and hyper-competitive. So that's a crapshoot. You know, when you go to work for somebody, you may or may not know how they're going to behave under fire. And it takes time to get to know people. It takes time to get to use, you know, it takes time to get used to people. It certainly takes a long time to become a seasoned veteran attorney because the legal field is extremely complex and it's hyper-competitive. And it's, you know, there's a notion of we have to be perfect lawyers all the time. Nobody can make a mistake. If you make one mistake, it's the end of your career. And so it's a high-stakes game. And I've done jury trials and all kinds of litigation in my life. And I've represented a lot of different kind of people and clients. And it's, you know, it's sad for me to look back 25 years down the road now and look in hindsight and just see all the experiences that I've had, that I've witnessed and experienced myself and not known whether I wanted to retaliate because I was upset over how somebody was being treated around me or how I was being treated or whether I should just move on and not say anything. And as I used to do plaintiff's work. So as a plaintiff's attorney, I would often tell my clients, you know, we have a duty to society to speak up when we see somebody hurting somebody, somebody engaging in some tortious behavior. I think we have a duty.
You know,
we don't have a, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and I want to ask Kieran this because it's an interesting point you bring up when you're talking about people witnessing it. Kieran, when they did the study, and you know, another interesting point David brings out is talking about performing under fire and the stresses that people have, and you don't know how things are going to turn out until the crisis occurs, and then all heck breaks loose. Kieran, what about people who witness this? Because David makes a good point. Like, how do you react? How do you respond if you're seeing it with a fellow attorney or a fellow associate?
The first thing I want to say is that stress, although it is an explanation for some of this conduct, I don't think it's ever an excuse. Yes, the profession is stressful, but if we can't deal with our colleagues and our peers in a way that is respectful, even in circumstances of high pressure, then we need to reflect and improve that behaviour. I think the role of witnesses and bystanders is important. We're seeing more and more emphasis on the bystander or the ally speaking up to alleviate the pressure on the target or the victim being the one who has to say, no, that's not okay, I'm going to report that, for example. In some jurisdictions, they've experimented with making that mandatory. So for sexual harassment, if you become aware of, whether you witness it or you later find out that someone sexually harassed someone in the profession, in some places there's an obligation on you to go to the regulator because that constitutes serious misconduct.
But again,
whether that's a good thing or not is open.
But it doesn't address the fear. I mean, certainly where there's serious misconduct, there may be an obligation. But, you know, obligations are only as good as what the person's willing to do. And, you know, when there's fear involved, and I think that's basically what both of you were talking about, is the overwhelming fear for the associate or for the person who is being harassed to open his or her mouth.
Hey, Alan, can I jump in real quick?
Exactly.
Sure, ahead.
So starting in the military, through a few occasions during my legal career, I have spoken up regarding behavior that I saw, not necessarily directed at me, but directed towards others. And I spoke truth to power, and it did not work well in most of those occasions.
Yeah.
So now, you know, I have experienced the fallacy that, you know, you can empower yourself by speaking your truth to the powers that be. And oftentimes that will backfire on you. And, you know, unless we address this in a more global fashion, meaning more people are getting on board with looking at bad behavior and saying, we're not going to stand for that anymore, then it's not going to shift. This is like the baby steps of baby steps.
You know, we have to take, David, we have to take a break. But just before we do, Kieran, how do you respond in a minute? How do you respond to what David's saying?
I think we definitely need more action on this. The IBA is calling for all of our stakeholders, our law firms, our bar associations, our law society members to come to the forefront on this. I think this is an issue whose time has come, and the Me Too movement has put a lot of spotlight on this. But change isn't inevitable either. We've had high-profile incidents of sexual harassment and bullying in the profession before, in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s. So hopefully now is the real inflection point, but there's no guarantee of that. And so, yes, we need everyone, every member of the profession to say this isn't good enough.
You know, it's interesting because I'm the chairperson of an education program throughout the state of California for injured workers' attorneys. And we had a meeting the other day, and one of the panels that we were proposing as part of the convention was called the Dog-Eat-Dog World Attorney versus Attorney. And I had presented it, but I got a lot of pushback from some of the board members as they said that, you know, do we really want to put this dirty laundry out into the convention setting, into a conference, into a seminar, into a panel? And my answer was yes. And I don't know if that's wrong of me to say, but I really think that what you're talking about, Kieran, and David as well, if it doesn't come out, if we're afraid to air our dirty laundry, so to speak, and discuss it on a panel, change will never occur. And you probably agree with me, but you can tell me after the break because I'm up against the clock. I got to take a break. You're listening to Garvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
ABC. You're listening to Gervie's Law, giving you a new perspective to enrich your life. Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Let's try to make a change. Don't bully me.
Wow. Powerful. Powerful song. Wayman and Genevieve, way to find the music appropriate for this show. Don't bully me. I don't know who sang that, but I'm looking at them and they don't either. So if anyone knows who sang Don't Bully Me, you can call us at 800-222-5222. I'm Alan Gervie. You're listening to Gervie's Law. We're talking about bullying and harassment in the legal profession. And we've been speaking with Kieran Pender, who is the legal advisor for Legal Policy and Research Unit of the International Bar Association, talking about the IBA survey of lawyers regarding bullying, sexual harassment. Also on the phone calling in, David was talking about his personal experiences after 25 years of practicing law and seeing bullying and experiencing it on his own. I had mentioned some time back we had Matt Packness on the show. I just want to say the name of his book because he was kind enough to send me a copy of that book. Successful Leaders Aren't Bullies. It's called Successful Leaders Aren't Bullies. Very, very impactful, interesting book. If you get a chance and you're interested in this subject, Matt Packness, a former football player at Brown University, coached on the staff with Joe Paterno at Penn State University, now an educator, an author, speaker, consultant, and the book's called Successful Leaders Aren't Bullies. And I want to turn our attention. We still have David on the line. And Kieran, and I wanted to talk about what I said before the break. When we talk about trying to improve the situation, which I think we've all agreed is quite egregious in law firms, in legal offices. And I had mentioned my own experience about people said, don't talk about it, don't have a conference about it. If that's occurring, Kieran, what do we do? How do we educate people that we have to talk about it?
I think we have to rip the Band-Aid and start talking about it. And the IBA is the global voice of the legal profession, is trying to lead by example. As I mentioned, we're having events all around the world in association with our partner bar associations and law societies. So that, you know, we had some in DC and New York to try and get the conversation going. We're really fortunate that Julia Gillard, the former Prime Minister of Australia, who was a lawyer, she provided the foreword to the report. She's speaking at the keynote session of our annual conference in Seoul. It's the biggest gathering of the lawyers globally, 6,000 or 7,000 convened in one place. And the main session later this year will be on this topic. So wow, we're trying out our hardest, and we hope that others all around the world will get this conversation going, because that's the first step towards improving the profession.
Yeah, that's a great step when you have someone speaking as a keynote speaker at a conference like that. And speaking of educators, I want to bring into the conversation Eleni Theodorou, and she is an anti-bullying educator and a children's author. She was raised in South Africa, lives in the United States, and she teaches children the art of compassion. Her anti-bullying program is called NOCO's Culture of Compassion Campaign. And she really is an expert and has done such hard work on exactly what you're talking about, Kieran, which is getting the word out about how we can improve the situation. Eleni, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, thank you for including me this evening.
Well, you've had a chance to listen to what Kieran has talked about, and David, who's called in, what he's spoken about. Tell us how your experiences in your campaign to educate people about anti-bullying, how they go and how open people are, especially when you start it at a kid's age. So hopefully it follows through when they become adults and maybe partners in a law firm.
Yes. Well, with regards to the program that I bring into the schools, I work with pre-K through grade 5 students. And schools, I'm based in New Jersey, so schools are becoming increasingly open to my kind of program that is interactive and multisensory in nature, covering various topics related to bullying and how we choose how we treat one another. New Jersey has some of the strictest anti-bullying laws in the country within education. And you may or may not have heard, but recently Mallory's Law is a bill that was passed by New Jersey legislators or Senate recently due to a mum that had pushed through after having losing her daughter, Mallory Grossman, 2 years ago to suicide as a result of bullying. So mum had taken it upon herself to push really hard to get the right people to listen, to sit up and to take action. And here we are now having passed this bill recently, within the last 3 weeks, actually, which is going to hold parents accountable and empower superintendents in their school district. So superintendents and leads of school, heads of school, are starting to pay attention. They are more open to more creative and impactful ways in terms of reaching out to the students, for students to understand that every one of us has a duty and a responsibility to report bullying when we see it, when we're experiencing it. And, you know, touching on both David's and Kieran's points about the importance of reporting the bullying, it is really so tough to motivate victims to speak up and witnesses to speak up. So I do it in a fun way for students, for them to understand their impact. I use multisensory tools. My protagonist is a porcupine, and they get to feel real porcupine quills. I compare our mean and unkind behavior to those quills, and I have them understand that when we speak up, we can help those that are in trouble. And they can do it in a variety of ways. Speak to a trusted adult at school. Maybe the teacher could have a bully box at school where they could write an anonymous note and pop that in at the end of the day. And we also work with a Swedish company that has a bullying app where students are able to report bullying anonymously if they choose. And they're also able to report pro-social behavior as well via the app, which is very specific. And the school responders are able to respond right away via the app and nip the problem in the bud.
You know, I have a 5- and 6-year-old, and I know that they listen so carefully. They're so impressionable. When you talk about something like NOCO's culture of compassion, and you talk about these kind of concepts, they're all new to my kids, and they seem so interested, and they really listen, and they believe it, and then they come back and say, oh, someone at school wasn't very nice. And I'm really impressed with that. But the question is for all of you, but I just really want to know how things break down. And maybe I'll start with David, because he's had so many difficult experiences, as a lot of lawyers have. Where do we see this wonderful education program that Elaney's talking about, and the change of law, which is really a positive step forward? Where do we see, and I think I know the answer, but where do we see the breakdown? When do these impressionable kids who really believe in trying to be nice to each other because of education, when do they turn their back on that and become bullies or become, you know, not the nicest people in the world? David?
So before I answer that question, I just want to let you know that in advance of today's discussion, I learned that the ABA has established a working group to advance well-being in the legal profession that started in September of 2017. It doesn't directly talk about anti-bullying. It talks more about substance abuse and mental health issues. But obviously, bullying can lead to substance abuse and mental health issues. I would prefer that we start getting on board with talking about anti-bullying, both from the bench, the bar, and amongst, you know, people in law firms, so we start thinking about cooperation instead of competition, because ultimately it's the clients that we serve. We don't serve ourselves. We make money serving clients. And I don't think we're doing any favors to clients if we're burning each other out, we're cranky, we're upset with each other, and the system itself is can be considered a laughingstock of all most of the professions. And it's terrible, because lawyers, I know some of the best people are lawyers, and I know some of the best people I can't stand that are lawyers, because they're
burned out.
Wait
a second. You know some of the best people that you can't stand are lawyers, meaning you don't like those people, or you're upset that they're the best people who became lawyers?
Well, there's the thing that, you know, there's a difference between conduct and character, and I heard this in a jury trial yesterday. I was listening to a young DA talk and instruct a jury on that difference, and I thought that that was very interesting. So what we're talking about is basic human conduct versus basic human character. And we're talking about the distinction between the soul of a person and the ego. And, you know, the law field is rampant with egos, and it's hyper-competitive. So until and unless we get to the point where we can start recognizing each other as a human being, then I have zero hope that this is ever going to turn around.
Okay, wait a second. Elaney is such a positive person. She's dedicated herself to volunteering for special needs children, senior citizens, active sponsor of nonprofit organizations, preventing cruelty to animals. You can't just sit there, Elaney, and hear that and say you have zero hope. Getting back to my initial question, how do you develop kids into young adults, into perhaps lawyers or positions of power who will have mutual respect for other human beings and not let the stress of the job, the money, the power overtake the need and the real obligation to be good people?
Well, I think it's important that we cultivate, you know, the the innocence and the beauty within our children and their willingness to do what's right. And we do that through education, through them helping them understand the difference between what's right and what's wrong, that they are able to be a hero instead of a hater. I know it does get more and more challenging as they age, especially with peer pressure and what they get to see on TV and various other role models that may be in their life. But it is important that we keep guiding them as educators, as parents, as leaders within the community. Keep guiding them along their purposeful path, help inspire them to pursue their gifts within themselves and their passions so they can stay focused on their goals, not get sidetracked by negative type of behaviors and antisocial behaviors. It's easier said than done, definitely. I don't feel all hope is lost. I do feel we are able to make a change if we work together collectively. And if we do apply enough pressure together on for these changes, to make these changes, you know, in my position, you know, I have to encourage the parents to work to not only be good role models for their children in how they treat each other, themselves and their spouses and those around them, but also build a relationship with the school district. And mental health is very important as well. I'm glad that you did touch on that, David, because oftentimes there are undiagnosed mental health issues, especially within the legal profession, if I may be candid. And I have been reading up on the AmericanBar.org where they had noticed that, or it's stated that there are many law students that show signs of depression, anxiety, and ADHD within the first 6 months of entering law school.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and after the first year of law school, 40% of those law students suffer from depression, which persists through law school and into their careers, often leading to, unfortunately, self-medicating behaviors, you know, whether it be alcohol, prescriptions, in an attempt to cope. So we need to help our children learn strategies and coping skills to help them with their big emotions, to help them be less reactive and more responsive, be more thoughtful in their decisions. And to be open to these discussions about bullying and about mental health and seek the help that they truly need. You know, by covering it up, we're not going to solve any problems.
You know, Elaney, you mentioned role models, and we only have a few more minutes, but I want to bring Kieran Pender in. It's an important thing when you talk about role models, because I remember when I was a young attorney, and there was an older gentleman who I really say was a real true gentleman. Excellent lawyer, but what I always thought about is everyone liked him and he had such a great reputation. To me, he was a role model. Isn't it true, Kieran, when you look at what the International Bar Association is trying to do, can't we show that there are attorneys who are model citizens, excellent attorneys, who handle the stress and pressure and still achieve, maybe make lots of money, but they have great reputations? How do we build on that, as Elaney says?
I entirely agree, and I think we need to show that leadership from the top, and we need our senior leaders to be those role models, to demonstrate behavior, both to call it out, say, you know, the adverse behavior is not acceptable, and then lead by example. And it's been heartening, you know, for me that our president, Brazilian lawyer Horacio Bernardes Neto, he's been really supportive of this project. Other senior members of the IBA, you know, very senior lawyers from around the world, have championed this project, and we need, you know, more senior lawyers globally to get on board. And as I said, I think there's two elements to that role. There's one, leading by example, and two, making it very clear, setting the tone from the top that this conduct is not okay. And that, as you said, you can be an excellent lawyer, bring in money, win cases, and still be a good human being.
You know, Kieran, we have to sign off in a moment, but I want you to just give the listeners any information they can about how they can either look at the study or how they can help out if they're interested in this subject.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's available online, ibanet.org/harassment.aspx. Just go to the IBA website. It's there. The report, it's 130 pages long, so it might not be bedtime reading for everyone, but we've got a summary that's just 4 pages. It's available at the moment in 9 or 10 languages. We want it to be even more accessible. There are videos. We did a webinar just yesterday on this. We're producing more and more material, having events all around the world. So we'd really appreciate the support of your listeners to spread this message.
And that's all at the IBA.org website, which is International Bar Association, correct?
Yeah, IBANet.org.
IBANet.org. You mentioned bedtime reading. Eleni, in a few seconds, why don't you tell us about your bedtime reading? I'm interested. I want my kids to get copies of the book and the program, NOCO's Culture of Compassion Campaign. Let us know how people can get that.
Certainly. So everything is available at my website. That's www.nocothenight.com. That's NOCO with an N. You will get to see who I am, what I'm about, and the impact that we're making in schools across the country. We have a number of free resources for parents and educators to download and use at home at their leisure if they wish, or in the classroom. And all my contact information is there as well, and I serve various school models and go where I'm welcomed.
That's wonderful, wonderful work. I'll definitely pass it around. My kids are of that age, 5 and 6 years old, with their friends.
Wonderful.
I want to thank you, Eleni. I want to thank you, Kieran. And, of course, David, thank you for taking the time to come on and having the guts to talk about a subject that a lot of lawyers just won't talk about.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it.
All right. We appreciate all of you, and let's make an impact on this. Let's talk again another time when we have made an impact and a dent into bullying and harassment in the legal profession. Thanks for joining us today on Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie, and we'll see you next week.
This show furnished by Rowan Gervie and Wynn.